Good job presenting the question, Lan said. No, at least not where the individual's other family members have significant assets, and where the couple is about to be married and have no children yet. I think I can safely add that it's especially common for fiancés to revise their wills as a way to make up for a prenuptial agreement that their family is insisting upon. Parents tend to care about prenups, but never imagine that their children will ever predecease them. If you know all the terms of Amanda's will and prenup, I'm not sure how much more I can add.
What we really want to know, Lori said, is whether Jeff knew about the terms of Amanda's will prior to her disappearance.
Obviously, Jeff knew about the prenuptial agreement, Lori thought, as he was a party to it and had to sign off on it. But it was possible that he had no idea until after he returned from the Grand Victoria that Amanda had also written a will, naming him as the primary beneficiary. The inheritance wasn't a motive for murder if he didn't know about it. Alex had been the one to notice that Amanda's will was signed on the same date as the couple had signed the prenuptial agreement. Now Alex pointed out that fact to Lance.
My guess is that they came here together to sign, Alex said. If you went over the terms of Amanda's will in front of Mr. Hunter, then attorney-client privilege wouldn't apply. Amanda was the client, not Jeff.
Very clever, Lance said.
And yes, that's precisely what happened. Amanda was quite comfortable speaking about these matters in front of Jeff. Not that I'm an expert in such things, but they seemed very much in love. You don't really think he killed her, do you?
We haven't committed ourselves to any one theory, Lori said. But working with families on their legal matters, you must understand why we'd at least want to consider Jeff as a possible suspect and why the terms of Amanda's will might be relevant.
Lance smiled knowingly.
Oh, I certainly do understand, but I also knew my client. I think you're overlooking another possibility.
He kept looking at them, waiting for them to follow his train of thought. He seemed amused at their befuddlement.
When Amanda first disappeared, many of the news outlets called her the runaway bride, cold feet, etc. My guess is that your show will assume that 5 years with no word makes a voluntary disappearance less likely.
Lori nodded. That's a good assumption. The knowing smile returned.
Unless it's not.
He added another hint.
Maybe the will is relevant in a way you haven't considered.
As she often did when it came to legal issues, Lori found herself looking to Alex for guidance. But on this one, she had more knowledge than he did of the personalities involved. It wasn't a legal puzzle. It was a puzzle about human motivations. Both Jeff and Sandra say that Amanda would have never just walked away without a trace. But if she wanted to start over again and felt like she owed something to Jeff, Alex finished her thought.
Naming Jeff in her will and then disappearing was a way to eventually give some of her family's wealth to him, despite her father's insistence that he sign a prenup.
Lance was nodding in agreement, pleased that he was being given the opportunity to share his thoughts.
I've said as much as I probably can about my own dealings with Amanda, but I can say that in general, sometimes when people have been very sick and could have died, they become keenly aware of their mortality. They want to make the most of every day. Maybe breaking your family's hearts is worth it if you can spend the rest of your days living on the other side of the world, doing exactly what you want.
27. That night at 7:30, Alex was thrilled to hear the sound of the keys in the front door. His brother Andrew had made it to New York with time to spare before dinner. He was about to pull the door open when he felt it being pushed.
Glad to have the better-looking Buckley on the premises, Alex said with a laugh.
Younger and better looking, Andrew said as he embraced his brother.
Ramon was hustling away his suitcase. As much as Alex enjoyed his life, so busy with work,
He felt most at home when Andrew was here.
One of the reasons Alex had bought this large apartment on Beekman Place, 6 rooms plus housekeeper's quarters, was so his younger brother could always have his own room, and there would be plenty of space when he brought his family up for a weekend. Andrew was a corporate lawyer in D.C. who came up to New York frequently on business. There was a reason it felt natural for Alex to have his brother under the same roof with him. For a long time, it had been only the two of them. Their parents had died within 2 years of each other. At only 21 years of age, Alex became Andrew's legal guardian. He sold their parents' home in Oyster Bay, and the two of them moved to an apartment on the Upper East Side, where they lived together until Andrew graduated from Columbia Law School. At commencement, Alex thought he probably cheered louder than any of the graduates' parents. Alex walked over to the bar to make cocktails, while Ramon continued to prepare dinner in the kitchen. Measuring shots of gin into a martini shaker, Alex asked Andrew about Marcy and the kids. He and Marcy now had a 6-year-old son and 3-year-old twin daughters. "I love coming back to the city," Andrew said, "but man, it's getting harder and harder to leave them, even for a few days. Marcy tells me I'm lucky to have a break, but I miss them like crazy when I'm here." Alex smiled, wondering what that was like. He handed Andrew a martini, and the two of them clinked glasses. "So what's your story, Alex? I thought I might finally meet Lori tonight. She couldn't join us?" Alex regretted mentioning the possibility when Andrew had phoned yesterday. "I invited her, but she's lining up a new case. When she jumps in, it's not just with both feet. She gets in all the way up to her ears. She didn't want to ruin dinner by being distracted." Andrew was nodding. "Sure, I understand." It was obvious to Alex that his brother, in fact, did not understand. When Lori said she didn't want to meet Andrew until she could give him her full attention, Alex accepted the explanation at face value. Now he was seeing it as yet another wall standing between them. "Hopefully next time." Alex found himself relieved when Ramon appeared with a small plate of hors d'oeuvres. He had not realized until that moment how much he wanted Andrew to meet Lori. Andrew was the only real family member he had. Would there ever be a time when Lori would become part of this family too? 28. "Are you sure you don't want my help, Dad?" Lori called out to the kitchen.
"Tonight's my night with my sous chef," Leo said, popping his head around the corner.
Lori smiled at the sight of her father in the chef's hat that Timmy had given him last year for Father's Day. Timmy's grinning face, smeared with tomato sauce, appeared for an instant and then disappeared into the kitchen again. Her father was preparing what he called his Leo lasagna for dinner. She knew from eating it that it contained Italian sausage, mozzarella, and fresh ricotta, but that didn't explain why it tasted better than every other sausage lasagna she had ever sampled. Her father was so protective of the recipe that he joked about putting it in his will.
"I'll get it out of Timmy," she said.
"What's that new video game you're asking for?"
"Nice try, Mom," Timmy said. "Grandpa, your secrets are safe with me." "Lori, I'm actually surprised you're home. Alex told me that Andrew was coming into town. I assumed you would want to join them for dinner tonight."
After Alex accepted her invitation to host Under Suspicion, Leo had struck up a friendship with him outside of the show. They had grown even closer since Lori and Alex had started seeing each other. She was delighted that her father approved and had someone to talk sports with, but sometimes there were downsides to their independent communications.
"I was too wired," she said. "I needed to get some more work done before I could relax." "Well, then go ahead and do it," her father said. "Chardonnay or Pinot Noir?"
With her father and son hard at work on dinner and a glass of wine in hand, it was a good time to follow up on some of the issues that had come up today on Amanda's case. First on her mind was Charlotte's claim that Megan accused Amanda of stealing a multi-million dollar idea. There was no reason Charlotte would make that up, but it seemed far-fetched to think that Megan would kill her best friend over a business dispute.
Besides, Lady Form continued to own the idea, whether Amanda was there to control it or not. But Lori's conversation with Charlotte echoed for a second reason, her description of her sister's personality. Sandra made Amanda sound almost impossibly happy about every aspect of her life. She hadn't even mentioned Amanda's cancer. But Charlotte spoke about Amanda in a darker way, as if both women were trapped beneath their parents' expectations. Lori had gotten the same impression from Mitchell Lands. If the lawyer was right, maybe Amanda had changed her will to leave some money behind for Jeff once she disappeared for good. She scrolled through her emails until she found the one from Jerry with all the contact information for the show's participants. She dialed a number on her cell phone. Amanda's brother, Henry, answered after two rings. A moment later, she was having a hard time hearing Henry over the sound of a crying child in the background.
"I hate to say this, but I probably know less about Lady Form than you do. Maybe no one told you, but I'm sort of the black sheep in the family. I love my dad, but I had no interest in spending the rest of my life making underwear, let alone fighting with my sisters about the right to do it. I moved out west with a college buddy and started an organic wine company in Washington. Aside from both of us preferring to run our own businesses, I'm about as different from Walter Pierce as a son could be. If Megan accused Amanda of stealing some idea, I know nothing about it. And I can't say anything about Jeff's whereabouts that night because I crashed early. It was a party weekend for everyone else, but Holly and I had just had our first baby, Sandy. All I wanted to do that week was sleep.
But you were at the Grand Victoria with the rest of the wedding party. You must have spent time with Megan and your sister.
Oh, yeah, sure. I didn't hear a cross word between them. And I think if they'd been talking about the company, I would have tuned them out because, frankly, it's boring. I understand that Charlotte would blow some tiff about a Lady Form idea out of proportion, but if I had to guess, I'd say there was no bad blood between Megan and Amanda. If Megan came across as not being worried, that's just how she is. Maybe it's because she's a lawyer or something like that.
What do you mean by not worried? Lori asked. They had received her signed agreement to participate, but even though they had exchanged messages, she had still not actually spoken to Megan directly.
You know, she's kind of a cool cucumber, never gets ruffled. I can be the same way. Like at first when Jeff was running around the resort looking for Amanda, I assumed she went for a swim or something. But once we realized she hadn't slept in her room, even I was panicked. But not Megan. She was acting like everything was okay.
Do you think she knew more than she let on?
Wow, you really are suspicious, aren't you? No, like I said, it's just her way. Different strokes for different folks. So has everyone agreed to do the show?
Yes, everyone we asked.
Kate Fulton?
Her too. Is there something I should be asking her? As you said, I'm suspicious of everyone.
Touché. No, I was just wondering. I don't stay in touch with any of Amanda's friends anymore. Look, I have no idea what happened to my sister, and I still miss her like crazy. But I've got to be honest. I don't think you're going to learn anything new with this show.
And why is that?
Because as much as it pains me to say it, my best guess is that she went out late for a swim or a walk and crossed paths with the wrong kind of person. The kind of person who doesn't get caught. I, for one, am not looking forward to being back down there.
29. Lori was trying to picture Amanda's best friend remaining calm while everyone else panicked. Maybe Henry was right. Not everyone responds to worries in the same way. Or maybe, as Amanda's best friend, Megan had been in denial, refusing to believe that anything could have possibly gone wrong. She looked at her watch. It was just past 7:30, not too late to call someone in Atlanta. She picked up her phone again and called Kate Fulton. Lori introduced herself and asked if Kate had time to review some basic information. Kate confirmed that she was a homemaker in Atlanta, a mother to four children, and wife to her high school sweetheart, Bill. Lori found comfort that Kate's bio lined up with the information they'd gathered so far in their research. Preparations had been moving so quickly, she was worried they would overlook something important. Not to mention that several of the participants were spread out across the country, so she was forced to question some people by phone. "How did you feel when you realized that Amanda was missing?" Lori asked.
"Terrified. I don't even know how to describe it. It was like time stopped and everything went blank. I just knew in the pit of my stomach that something had gone horribly wrong. I couldn't stop crying. In retrospect, I'm sure I only made things worse for Amanda's poor family."
"What about Megan? Did she react the same way?"
"Oh, God, no. Megan? She's the exact opposite. Her way of dealing with bad news is to try to fix it. In college, we called her TCB, always taking care of business. She's a planner and thinker, but Amanda's disappearance was something that even Megan couldn't fix. She was at a loss for what to do, but no, she's not a crier."
"Did you find it strange when she began a relationship with Jeff?" Kate paused for a moment.
"Of course we were all surprised. I didn't even know they were dating. Megan called me after the wedding, or what she referred to as their non-wedding, just vows exchanged at the courthouse."
"Is it possible they might have been seeing each other before Amanda disappeared?" This time, she didn't need to reflect before answering.
"No way. Jeff was head over heels for Amanda. Megan had tried getting his attention before, and they just didn't click. I think it was actually their mutual love for Amanda that helped bring them together later."
Lori heard her father tell Timmy to be careful of the heat from the oven and resisted the temptation to walk to the kitchen to supervise.
"What do you mean she had tried getting his attention?" "They'd gone on a couple of dates. Megan was always interested in Jeff, even in college. If you've seen him, you know he's very attractive, and they were both drawn to public interest work. They're a good match, but for whatever reason, they didn't hit it off at first. I think Megan was sort of disappointed."
"So Megan played matchmaker for Amanda? That was thoughtful."
"Not really. Jeff bumped into Megan in the neighborhood, and Amanda happened to be there."
That was interesting. Lori had gotten the impression that Megan had intentionally set up Amanda with Jeff. She was about to ask for more details when Kate shifted the conversation back to Amanda's disappearance.
"More so than anyone except maybe Mr. Pierce, Megan really wanted to believe that Amanda left on her own. I always thought it was her way of coping."
Lori shook her head in frustration. She still had no sense of Megan as a person. After she and Alex met with Jeff, she had called Megan twice to try to schedule a meeting, but got voicemail both times. Megan had replied only by email, saying that she was busy at work, but looked forward to talking soon.
"That's what we keep struggling with on our end," Lori said. "To us, it seems far more likely that something bad happened to Amanda. Why would anyone possibly disappear for all these years?"
"They wouldn't, or at least Amanda wouldn't, but at the time, it hadn't been a matter of years, and we were all trying to convince ourselves there was some explanation. It was the day before the wedding, and Amanda was having doubts."
"She was?" Charlotte said she sensed her sister was having second thoughts, but this was the first time anyone had claimed to have heard Amanda express them.
"Doubts might be too strong of a word, but when we were alone, she was asking me if I was happy, if I wished I had met Bill later in life, whether I'd had enough adventure before settling down. But if I thought she was really going to back out of the wedding, I wouldn't have been so terrified when she was missing. I can't bring myself to say this to Sandra, but I'm convinced my friend is dead. I know for a fact she wouldn't put her family through this."
"How can you be so sure?"
"Back when we were at Colby, a girl named Carly Romano disappeared. It was nearly 2 weeks before they found her body in Messalonskee Lake. Actually, this will give you some idea of how Megan and Amanda were so different. We didn't really know Carly, but the entire college was affected.
Amanda was the one who organized the prayer sessions and candlelight vigils. Megan was the one who helped organize the on-campus search teams and handed out flashlights and safety whistles. Amanda was a caretaker. Megan was a pragmatist. Anyway, one night while everyone was still searching, Amanda told me she nearly broke down when she met Carly's parents. She said she almost hoped they'd find a body because she couldn't imagine anything worse for a parent than not knowing. Lori thought she was living in hell those 5 years when Greg's murder was unsolved. She couldn't imagine how she would have felt if he had simply failed to come home one night. How do people go on?
Leo hadn't allowed Lori into the kitchen while he was cooking, but he seemed more than happy to let her help with the cleanup. Timmy was off the hook because of his work as sous chef and was in his room practicing the trumpet Leo had bought him last month. He was an enthusiastic student, but as far as Lori was concerned, his weekly lessons couldn't kick in soon enough. While she transferred the leftover lasagna into a Tupperware dish, she made a point of using the spatula to prod between the layers.
Provolone cheese? She asked.
Nope.
Gouda?
Her father shook his head.
I'm not going to tell you.
Can you at least tell me if it's a dairy product?
It is not.
That was the biggest hint her father had ever given her.
Spinach?
Lori, I know you're not the world's most knowledgeable cook, but please tell me that even you would notice if there were chunks of spinach in your dinner, and you certainly know I could never sneak that past my grandson.
Generally, Timmy was not a finicky eater, but he had decided in kindergarten that Popeye food was not for him. He said it made his teeth feel yucky.
Dad, I've been so busy with work we haven't had a chance to talk about the Amanda Pierce case. I can't stop thinking about her.
When you first mentioned it, the case seemed perfect for your show,
Leo replied as he started the dishwasher.
At first, I was drawn to it because I knew it would attract viewers. But the more I learn about Amanda, the more interesting she becomes. She wasn't just another pretty face from an impressive family with a storybook wedding. She was complicated and still getting to know herself. She was so young, but had already survived a serious illness. Some of the things I've heard about her remind me of myself and what I would have done, like organizing prayer vigils for a missing girl in college. But she wasn't perfect by any means either.
Lori continued to talk about the case as she wiped down the countertops. When she'd brought him up to speed, she glanced around the kitchen.
I guess we're almost finished here.
She turned to face Leo. Bullying Megan into retracting her claims that Amanda stole an idea from her seems especially cold. But do you think it could possibly have anything to do with her disappearance? Before Leo could answer, Lori's cell phone began buzzing on the counter.
No rest for the weary, Leo commented.
The number on the screen was unfamiliar, but Lori did recognize the 561 Palm Beach area code. When she answered, a man's voice said he hoped he wasn't calling too late.
I spoke this afternoon to your assistant, Jerry. He told me I should call you if I remembered anything more about Amanda.
And this is...
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Ray Walker. I was supposed to photograph the wedding for Amanda Pierce and Jeff Hunter.
Yes, of course, Mr. Walker. Jerry briefed me on your conversation earlier today.
The photographer had confirmed that he was not the man in the hotel surveillance video, the one carrying a camera as he appeared to turn to follow Amanda. According to Walker, he had left the property by then to work with another client. More importantly, Jerry had learned that Walker was 6'4" and thin and had been 5 years earlier as well. The man in the video was slightly overweight and of average height.
After I hung up, I kept thinking about that weekend. It's hard to retrace your steps so many years later, but of course the events stand out because of what happened. I've had weddings canceled at the last minute before, but never because the bride disappeared. It was very upsetting.
We very much appreciate any help you can give us, Mr. Walker. I believe Jerry explained we were trying to identify a man from the hotel surveillance system.
He did, and that's what got me thinking. I was at another wedding the evening Amanda disappeared, so I assumed I had nothing that might help the police.
But when Jerry called, he said the video you were interested in was earlier, at 5:30.
That's correct. Well, it dawned on me that I had an intern back then. His name was Jeremy Carroll. He was self-trained, but quite good. He had a real eye for candids, which is why I took him on. In photography, sometimes assistants can be more trouble than they're worth. Anyway, he was with me at the Grand Victoria earlier in the day. We spent about 2 hours there on some informal shots with the wedding party. He would have been carrying a camera and was about the same height and weight as the man Jerry described from the video. The intern's name didn't sound familiar from the reports Lori had read. She began drying the salad bowl her father had just rinsed.
Do you know if the police ever spoke to Jeremy about that night?
I doubt it. Like I said, I assumed he left when I did at 5 o'clock. But now I realize I can't say that for certain. Here's the thing. A couple of months after that, I wound up letting Jeremy go. He made some of the clients uncomfortable.
Lori's radar went up. How so?
Socially. They mentioned that he didn't seem to respect proper boundaries. When you're photographing intimate events like weddings, it can be tempting to think that you become part of the inner circle. You don't. Anyway, I never thought too much more about him until your show called today. Now I'm thinking, maybe he took it upon himself to keep hanging around. It's a long shot, but I thought I'd mention it.
Lori found a notepad and jotted down the name Jeremy Carroll. Walker didn't have contact information for him, but he said Carroll was around 25 years old when he worked for him. Lori thanked Walker profusely before saying goodbye.
I take it your caller had something interesting to say? Leo observed.
She summarized her conversation with Walker. If Jeremy's the man from the video, I need to talk to him. It really did look like he turned around to follow Amanda. But all I have is a fairly common name and an approximate age.
No, you have more than that. You have a father who still knows a thing or two about basic police work.
Leo snatched the piece of notepaper from the counter, and Lori knew that First Deputy Police Commissioner Farley was on the case. 31. The next morning, Lori had no sooner reached her desk than her phone rang. She suspected it would be Brett. I swear whenever he calls, even the ring sounds angry, she thought. Keeping her fingers crossed, she picked up the phone. It was Brett. Typical of him, there was no exchange of greetings.
Lori, I'm very upset, he bellowed.
It was obviously the beginning of a wonderful day.
Can you please tell me why some local yokel reporter in Palm Beach, Florida, is calling me for a comment on our plan to shoot the Runaway Bride segment at the Grand Victoria? That was supposed to be kept under wraps.
Brett, we tried to keep it quiet. We had to be in touch with the hotel manager, the director of security, and other personnel. Obviously, somebody spoke to the reporter.
Who cares who blabbed? The point is that your supposedly cold case is hot again. Lori, don't worry about expenses.
That's a first coming from him, Lori thought.
Get your team down there yesterday. I don't want 60 minutes to do a piece on the runaway bride and beat us to the punch.
The click of the receiver hitting the cradle signaled that the conversation was over. 32. Yesterday turned out to be 6 days later. 6 days. In the past, Lori had spent weeks reinvestigating an entire case from beginning to end before starting to film. But now they were at the Grand Victoria, just hours away from turning on the cameras. Even worse, those 6 days had been spent almost entirely on coordinating the logistics. Lori felt as though she needed another month to dig into the facts. But the accelerated schedule gave her no choice other than to plow forward. She felt the stress of the situation wash away as she walked through the breezeway at the hotel entrance. For a brief moment, it felt as though she had stepped back in time. She remembered Greg reaching for her hand.
Happy anniversary, Lori.
She assumed at the time they'd have at least 50 more.
Mom!
Timmy was already heading toward the pool.
This place is awesome!
The one upside of the ridiculously rushed timeline was that Timmy was still on summer break, so he and Leah were treating the trip as a vacation. It was 90 degrees and humid, but if Timmy had palm trees and a pool to splash around in with a few other kids, he'd be happy to stay year-round. The resort was even more beautiful than she remembered, modern but inspired by classic villas of the Italian Renaissance. A man in his 50s wearing a tan poplin suit was heading directly for her. "Are you Ms. Lori Moran, perchance? Erwin Robbins, general manager." She returned his friendly handshake and thanked him for all the help he'd already provided. Robbins hadn't been kidding when he said that the resort wanted to help in any way possible. They had donated rooms for Amanda's parents and the entire wedding party, and provided a generous discount for the production team. "And who's this young man here?" Erwin asked, gesturing toward Timmy. "Your number one investigator?"
"Don't tell anyone," Timmy piped up, "but I'm undercover. I'll be needing a pool for my work."
2 hours later, Grace turned in a circle, gawking at the enormity of Alex's suite.
"This room's the size of all of ours put together."
For once, Grace wasn't exaggerating. Alex's suite was more like a large apartment with an enormous living room. He generously suggested that his living room serve as a conference area for the team.
It was 4 o'clock, and they were meeting for one last team discussion before the first production session this evening.
A reunion cocktail gathering for the wedding party and Amanda's parents in the ballroom where Amanda and Jeff were supposed to have had their wedding reception.
"Alex, the front desk clerk probably upgraded you when she saw those beautiful eyes," Grace said.
Alex laughed. He was used to Grace flirting with him, and Lori knew he got a kick out of it.
"Have you met Jeff's college friends yet, Lori?" he asked.
"Not in person, but I spoke to them on the phone. According to Sandra, they're both rich bachelors."
"The tall one, Nick, is a hunk," Grace interjected. "But that other one, Austin, he's lucky he's rich. Now Jeff, on the other hand," she pretended to fan herself, "he looks so sweet and innocent and has no idea how gorgeous he is. Of the three of them, he's the catch."
"Do I need to remind you he might be a murderer?" Jerry asked.
Timmy bounded into the room from the terrace where he had been checking out the view of the ocean below.
"Alex, did you bring a bathing suit? There's a water park here with a slide that's 4 stories tall."
Lori gave her son a hug.
"Alex and I have to work. I told you Grandpa's going to be the one to take you. And believe it or not, Jerry was very excited about the possibility of joining you. If I can spare a few hours without him, he just might race you down the slide."
"You don't race on a super slide, Mom," Timmy corrected her, as if she had suggested that the Yankees were a football team.
"It's only wide enough for one person, and you didn't even let Alex answer. Anyway, if Jerry can miss part of a day, why can't Alex?"
"Because he's busy," Leo said, taking charge. "Come on, buddy. Let's go down to the pool. We've got time for a short swim before dinner."
Lori shifted into work mode once Leo and Timmy were gone. She kept waiting for something to go terribly wrong, given how they'd rushed into production.
"Jerry, have you confirmed that everyone is here?"
"To a person," Jerry reported cheerfully.
"I also did a walkthrough in the ballroom with the camera crew. The hotel has staged it to resemble a smaller version of the reception Amanda and Jeff had planned. The room is absolutely stunning. White flowers and candlelight everywhere. I imagine that everyone seeing it, and all being together once again, should have quite the impact."
Once they did a quick run-through of the participants and the points they wanted to cover in each individual interview, Lori stood up and tucked her notebook in her bag as a signal that their meeting was ending.
"And what exactly is my role this evening?" Alex asked, smiling.
Tonight's gathering was not for interviews, Alex's forte on the program.
"Just be your usual charming self."
The show always worked best when the participants were comfortable enough with Alex to let their guard down on camera.
Without preliminary in-person interviews, he'd have to find alternative ways to build a rapport.
"And don't forget the tuxedo," Grace reminded him with a wink as she followed Jerry out of the room.
"I apologize on behalf of my boy-crazy assistant," Lori said once they were alone. "I may have to call the Human Resources Department to give her a refresher course on sexual harassment."
Alex stepped toward her and took her into his arms.
"Are we in any position to complain about romance occurring within your production team?"
She looked up at him as he leaned down to kiss her.
"No, counselor. I suppose we are not."
Lori found her father and son at the Active Pool, the most family-friendly of the resort's four oceanfront pools. Timmy was hanging off one side of a float, being steered by a slightly smaller child. It was just like her son to make a new friend within minutes of arrival. His father had been similarly outgoing. He was so much like Greg. Her father was on a nearby lounge chair, one eye on his grandson, the other immersed in the latest Harlan Coben thriller. Years ago, he had given his business card to the author at a book signing, with an offer to answer any police-related questions he might have down the road. Lori had never heard her father yelp so excitedly as when he spotted his own name in the acknowledgments of his favorite author's next book. Lori made herself comfortable on the chair next to him. "I can take over from here so you can keep both eyes on your book for a while."
"Timmy's easy to watch these days. The kid would be more likely to save me from drowning than vice versa. Hey, by the way, I made another call to the local police about that photography intern, Jeremy Carroll."
"Any luck?" she asked.
"Maybe. There's a Jeremy Carroll, 31 years old, longtime local resident, whose height and weight listed on his Florida driver's license would seem to fit the general description. He's got a clean record, except for a contempt conviction for violating some kind of court order. I called the court clerk and asked for a copy of the records. I'll let you know what comes of it."
"Thanks, Dad. I should talk to Brett about adding you to the payroll."
"No amount of money would be worth having to take orders from Brett Young. By the way, don't you need to get dolled up for the big reunion party?"
"You know me. Dolled up means brushing my hair and putting on some lip gloss." Lori knew that she was an attractive woman, but she never felt comfortable beneath layers of makeup and hairspray. She kept her honey-colored hair in a simple shoulder-length bob and rarely applied more than a single coat of mascara to highlight her hazel eyes. "And I do have a new cocktail dress that costs too much money, but I know I look good in it."
"You're beautiful just the way you are," Leo said. "I know you've been stressed out about the ridiculous pace Brett's expecting, but let yourself have some fun. You and Alex will both be dressed to the nines tonight. I'm happy to stay up with Timmy if the two of you want to make a night of it after the reception. Who knows? Maybe all this talk about the wedding that never came to pass will prove to be motivational."
Lori was stunned by her father's suggestion. "Dad, we are so far from anything like that. Please don't plant those seeds in Timmy's head, or Alex's either, for that matter."
Okay, I was only kidding. Lighten up."
"Good, you scared me for a second." Her father was looking at her, his book now closed on the table next to him.
"Lori, I was only kidding about a proposal being around the corner. But I do want to say one thing. I've seen the way you keep Alex at a distance. Most of the time, you're very formal around him. You steer the conversation back around to work. And when Timmy asked about Alex going with him to the water park, you said no before Alex could even answer."
"Dad, what are you trying to tell me?"
"I'll be blunt. It's as if you're afraid of letting him see the real Lori."
"Alex sees plenty of the real me, Dad. But we're not spring chickens who are going to drop our entire lives and run off together. We're taking things at our own pace."
"That's fine, and I know you're a grown woman and don't need your father telling you how to live your life. But let me say this once, just in case it needs to be said. I know how much you loved Greg. We all did."
Leo's voice cracked briefly.
"The two of you had a great 5 years. But that doesn't mean the rest of your life has to be lonely. Greg, of all people, would not want that for you.
I'm not lonely, Dad. I have you and Timmy and Grace and Jerry, and yes, I have Alex. You may want me to leap in faster, but we are in a good place. Trust me.
His mouth opened to speak again, but she interrupted.
Dad, do I ask why I haven't seen you keeping any ladies' company since Mom passed?
There are several lovely widows I can introduce you to at church. They're never shy about asking how you are.
He gave her a sad smile.
All right, you've got me there.
Don't worry about me, Dad. I know Alex cares for me. If it's meant to be, it will happen naturally. We shouldn't have to overthink it.
Lori's own words echoed in her mind as she walked back to her room. With Greg, there had been no time to overthink. She had met him because she got hit by a cab on Park Avenue. They used to joke that they were the only couple who legitimately had different versions of how they met. When Greg first met Lori, she was unconscious. When Lori first met Greg, he was shining a pen light in her eyes to see if she would finally blink. They were engaged 3 months later.
If it's meant to be, it will happen naturally.
When Lori spoke those words to her father, she had been thinking about Greg, not Alex.
Jerry had told Lori that the ballroom was decorated beautifully, but words didn't do justice to the setting. It felt like a scene from a fairy tale. White roses and lilies were everywhere, and tiny white lights shimmered from the ceiling like stars on a country night. Grace and Jerry were dressed for the event. Grace wore a surprisingly unrevealing cobalt blue gown, and Jerry looked dapper in his slim-fit tuxedo.
The two of you clean up nice, Lori remarked. Well done. We should get some great footage to set the tone for the show's opening sequence.
She glanced over at the camera crew. The lead cameraman gave her a thumbs up to signal that he was ready. They would not be recording their voices, but they wanted to capture the moments when the participants first saw each other in the room. Then Alex, in a voiceover, would narrate the scene and identify the people. Sandra and her children, Henry and Charlotte, were the first of the participants to arrive for the reception. Even with her elegant silk pantsuit, Sandra had found a place for a button of Amanda's photograph, complete with the image of a yellow ribbon on her lapel. Lori greeted Sandra and Charlotte with hugs, and then introduced herself to Amanda's brother, Henry.
Oh, Amanda would have loved this. Sandra wiped away a tear. Everything is precisely the way she wanted it.
Charlotte placed an arm around her mother and gave her shoulder a little squeeze.
As I recall, this is just the way you wanted it, Mom.
I know it is. I love to plan a party, it's true. And the joy of planning this one, I wanted everything to be so perfect.
It would have been, Mom, Henry tried to assure her.
He then began fiddling with his bow tie. He was a handsome man, but with shaggy hair and more than a few days of stubble, he did not seem comfortable in formal wear.
Charlotte nudged her mother.
Jeff just walked in.
Sandra stole a glance and then quickly turned away.
With Megan, of course.
Her tone was reproachful.
I know I pushed for this, Lori, but now that we're here, I have no idea how to act. I truly believe one or both of them is responsible for Amanda's disappearance. I wanted them to be here, but I didn't think it would be this hard to be in the same room with them.
Lori placed her hand gently on Sandra's arm.
Just do what comes naturally, Sandra. You don't even have to speak with them if you don't want to.
The beauty of reality television was letting the cameras capture human behavior, completely unrehearsed and unscripted.
Wow, Charlotte exclaimed. Kate looks terrific. She hasn't aged a day.
Lori turned to see a third person with Jeff and Megan, hugging them both. She was slightly shorter than Lori, around 5'4", with chin-length bright blonde hair and round, rosy cheeks. In the old college photographs Lori had seen, Kate had been the plain one compared to her two friends, but obviously she had put her best foot forward for an occasion like this.
Did she bring the family? Henry asked.
Her mother is minding the children, Sandra replied. I guess a true crime TV show isn't the best family vacation.
Except in my household, Lori thought, amused. She excused herself to make her way over to the Colby crowd of participants, pausing nearby to eavesdrop. She heard Jeff tell Kate and Megan that it was surreal to see his planned wedding reception with Amanda recreated.
It's certainly a far cry from our reception, Megan said. Margaritas and takeout barbecue in our apartment was more our speed.
Lori couldn't tell if she sensed resentment in Megan's tone. If Kate was at all suspicious of Jeff and Megan, or disapproving of their marriage, she didn't show it. They sounded like three old friends catching up.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Lori said, but I wanted to introduce myself.
Megan never had found the time to talk to Lori directly, and she had only spoken to Kate on the phone. Megan seemed to withdraw as both Kate and Jeff said they were excited about the possibility of discovering new clues about Amanda's disappearance once the show aired. Kate suddenly turned toward the entrance.
Take a look, guys. Nick hasn't changed a bit, but get a load of our little Austin, all grown up.
Kate leaned in toward Lori to fill her in on the backstory.
Nick was always a ladies' man, even in college. Austin was Nick's sidekick, but very much in his shadow. A complete disaster with women. He was always coming on too strong.
Well, I don't know about his success in the dating market, Lori said, but I doubt he's in Nick's shadow in all respects these days. The two of them flew down here on Austin's private jet.
The men were making a beeline for their old college friends.
La-di-da, Kate exclaimed when Austin reached them. A private jet, I hear. Who'd have thought that the Austin we knew in college would be doing that?
Careful, Kate, Austin protested good-naturedly. I can probably dig up some old pictures from when you stayed too long at happy hour.
Clearly, these friends were used to good-natured banter. Lori noticed Nick nudge his friend Austin.
Heads up, he said. We may have some competition for female attention at the bar tonight.
Lori turned to see Alex walking into the ballroom. She felt a catch in her breath. His face was slightly tanned already, and his tuxedo fit him perfectly. Lori immediately looked down at her own dress and was glad she had splurged on it, but she wished she had put on more makeup.
You look beautiful, as usual, Alex said when she walked toward him.
And of course, you're the essence of the man about town.
As she spoke, she was aware of the instant warmth from the closeness of their bodies. The last person to arrive was Walter Pierce, the family's patriarch. Unlike his wife Sandra, he marched directly up to Jeff and greeted him with a strong handshake. He even congratulated him and Megan on their nuptials and wished them a lifetime of happiness. As Lori scanned her cast of characters, she couldn't help but notice how the dynamic changed once Walter entered. Having said his hellos to Amanda's former fiancé and their friends, he moved directly to his family, where he remained for the rest of the night. The exchanges she had heard between Sandra and her children flowed less naturally. Every member of the Pierce family now seemed to focus on Walter. Was his flight okay? Did he like his room? Did he need another drink? Even with everything that had happened, he was still the head of the family.
Were there ever children who didn't care what their father thought of them? Lori wondered.
Then she answered her own question.
No.
After 10 minutes, she went over to the lead cameraman.
I just asked the wedding party and Sandra's parents to stand together for a group shot, she said. We'll close with that.
As they lined up and faced the camera, it was clear that this was not a typical wedding photograph. The earlier polite veneer was gone. Jeff had his arm protectively around Megan. Tears were spilling from Sandra's eyes. No one was even attempting to smile.
Is it possible that someone in the wedding party could have hated Amanda enough to take her life? Lori wondered. Unless the man in that grainy surveillance video or some other random stranger was the killer, it was highly likely that one of the people staring at the camera had killed Amanda. But which one?
Thirty-four.
It was 10 o'clock the next morning, and the cameras were ready to go to room 217 of the Grand Victoria. Jerry had chosen this room as the location to interview Sandra and Walter Pierce. He had learned that this had been their suite when they came to Palm Beach for their daughter's wedding, but ended up searching for her instead. According to the plan Lori had sketched out with Alex, Sandra would speak on camera first. Over the last 5 years, she had become the public face of the search for her daughter. She was the one who appeared on television regularly, pleading for the public's assistance. Noticeably nervous, her hands clenched, Sandra settled in on the love seat across from Alex's chair. She was wearing a turquoise linen blouse and white slacks. It was the same outfit she'd been wearing when she found out her daughter had disappeared. She told Lori she could never bring herself to get rid of it. She took a deep breath and nodded toward Lori, indicating she was ready. Alex began by asking Sandra to describe the moment when she first realized Amanda was missing.
"I think I felt it in my bones the second I walked into the lobby. I saw Jeff, Megan, and Kate gathered at the front desk, and I could tell something was wrong. And then Jeff said Amanda was gone, and I felt the ground disappear beneath me. Everyone else was worried, too, but also certain there would be some good explanation in the long run. But not me. I just knew something was dreadfully wrong."
"Was there a moment when those fears felt most confirmed?" Alex asked. She shook her head.
"That might be the worst part of not knowing what happened. I was numb, stunned, bewildered. But the moment when Amanda's disappearance really kicked in was when the police asked for her laundry to give to their canine team. The idea of dogs tracking my baby's scent."
Her voice trailed off.
"In the early days of the search," Alex said, "many in the media referred to your daughter as the runaway bride."
Sandra began shaking her head scornfully before Alex finished the sentence.
"It was terrible. There were stand-up comedians guessing how long it would be before she showed up drunk on a dance floor in Miami. My daughter is not some flighty, whimsical girl in a wedding veil. She is tough and smart."
"I notice you're speaking of her in the present tense," Alex said.
"I try to, yes. It's my way of saying I won't stop fighting for her, ever. She's out there, somewhere. Amanda Pierce is out there, whether alive or not, and she wants to be found. I'm as certain of that as anything I've known in my entire life."
Alex looked to Lori to see if she had any notes to give him before they moved on. She did not.
"Sandra," Alex said, "if it's okay with you, we have asked Amanda's father to join you in the discussion."
Less than a minute later, Walter entered the room, clearly uncomfortable, and sat next to Sandra on the love seat. Lori noticed that even though there was plenty of room for them both to sit comfortably, Walter chose a spot close to his ex-wife. She warmly gave his knee a gentle pat. Alex began.
"Walter, many of our viewers will recognize Sandra. Initially, you were in front of the cameras, too, but after about 3 months, from what I can tell, Sandra seemed to take the lead in the continuing search efforts. Are you as convinced as she is that something terrible happened to your daughter the night she disappeared?"
Walter looked down at his lap, then to Sandra.
"I've never been convinced of anything other than my love for Amanda and the rest of my family. I trust Sandra when she says she has a mother's connection to Amanda, that she knows in her blood and her bones that Amanda crossed paths with evil that night. I don't purport to have that kind of a sixth sense, but they were always connected that way. Back before the days of crib monitors, Sandra would even wake up in the middle of the night only to realize that Amanda had done the same. Remember that?"
Sandra nodded and said softly,
"I do."
Alex continued,
"My understanding is that Amanda, by all accounts, was already a tremendous asset to Ladyform, your family business." "She was indeed,"